This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Next on Plains FM, we have Movie Talk, a program for all things cinema-esque, for the discerning film and video junkie.
Welcome again to Movie Talk. Today we'll be looking at three totally different films, starting with the effects of dementia on the entire family in Ruby's Choice, a documentary with a deep look at the tragic life of Prince Charles's wife Diana in The Princess, and ultra-violence in Bullet Train.
I haven't seen this one before.
For her, it is new.
Keeps talking about your father like he's still alive.
She's not losing it, but I might if you don't stop.
So, why don't we try telling her the truth?
I'm going to tell you three things.
Ruby's Choice tries to give us an honest portrayal of dementia and its effect on every member of a three-generation family. Carolyn Brown's been off to the Hollywood Cinema at Sumner to see this complex but fascinating film. Carolyn, this film is about all the members of a family trying to look after a grandmother trying to cope with dementia. What did you think of Ruby's Choice?
I think as someone who is actually living with parents with dementia and Alzheimer's, I found the film quite challenging in places, but it was really interesting seeing Jane Seymour back on the screen.
As the grandmother,
because she's been away from the screen for a long time. And there were parts of the movie that were very sweet, but for me I found it not the best of films dealing with the topic, but what about you? You really liked it.
I think I liked it more than you did. No, I thought it was quite good. I mean, the way I understood it, this is an Australian film, and it's a complex film because, to me, I've seen in the last couple of years. We've seen about two other films. I've seen two other films on
the
dementia.
Father.
One
yep.
with an old man, another one with an elderly woman, and both films are specifically about the problems and issues of these people.
Oh, absolutely. And the film definitely brings those to life.
And that is it. And the rest of the people around them, the rest of the family around them are there to care and help a little bit wherever they can.
Especially when we've got dementia, a lot of people don't realise they have it.
Yes.
It makes
but
things
but
very
in this
difficult.
Film, it's totally different because in this one, they're too many main characters in this for family, too many family issues to deal with in one movie. Each individual of all ages has got some other problem.
Yes.
And their job or at home or outside or depending on their age and all this sort of thing and financial issues. Every issue under the sun comes up. And this seems just to take away
the focus on
the main character.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is a bit unfortunate, but you have to keep this in mind to understand that the film is there to point out the overall difficulties that dementia can have on a whole entire family.
With 50% of the profits going to dementia research, there's no doubt this film is supposed to be about dementia and raising awareness of the difficulties and also, and just, I think one of the things the film did actually get right was trying to get help from social services is really difficult.
Yes, well,
and
they say this in
this.
Australia that they financially they were not too well off to help their grandmother.
Yeah.
And And then there didn't seem to be much help from the government.
And also that sometimes unfair judgment that rest homes are the worst place to go to, like it's the place of last resort, and often actually no, those care homes are actually there for a reason, and they're very good. They can sometimes bring whole new life to the person who goes there.
Would you say these conditions also apply to New Zealand?
Oh, absolutely.
So the from government assistance.
I mean the social agencies. Yeah, they're underfunded. The focus is on keeping people in their homes. Sometimes that's to the detriment of the actual staying in the home. But back to this film. There were some lovely moments in it, and I
really?
Do. Just the interactions between the teenage daughter and the grandmother and her learning, I mean, the point of view of the teenager and having to come to terms with someone sharing a room.
Yes, well, she didn't like her grandmother all that much, but then she had to go and look after grandma.
Well, I think she was just being a teenager.
She had to go out, not go to school and stay at home to look after
That was an odd decision,
grandma.
But yes. Mm. Yeah.
And all this sort of thing, And of course, then it developed into a close friendship and relationship.
Yeah, which was really lovely to see as well.
Well, but this is what the whole film about. It is about family care as much as possible. So, but it's everybody involved in this.
Yeah.
Much more than in the usual dementia film. We're dealing with one person is enough.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
I don't think it helped that the screenwriter for the film, he is a comedy writer. And this is a very serious issue in many ways. So he was trying to make light of it. I think some of it was, hard to describe, but I think it was the wrong...
Was there any comedy
writer.
In this film?
Yeah.
I can't remember.
Like the lighthearted moments and stuff of the car going missing and things like that, making very light of very serious issues and stuff like that. Overall, it's not a bad film.
No, it's I think some people can identify.
Oh, absolutely.
With all these characters in the film. But then on the other hand, if you've had somebody like this in your own family, the film may be a bit unsettling.
Yeah, maybe it's too close to the bone.
Okay, well, anyway, I can't say I liked it, but I thought
it was
what it set out to do, I think it succeeded at that as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what do you think? Did it succeed? No.
I would have liked to have given it a good edit.
I can cut out a few of the characters.
But it wasn't a bad film. Don't get me wrong. Don't not go see it, especially because it does very much raise the awareness of what life is like for someone with dementia and the families around
it. And love for the family.
Even the community around it and stuff. So don't be put off going to the film just because I found it.
Okay, that's fair enough. Thank you very much, Karen.
Thanks.
That was Carolyn Brown with her views on Ruby's Choice, and I'm Hans Petrovic on Plains FM 96.9.
Wow, guys, look at this. Someone's out there, very important.
Oh, hey, is that her?
Sweet, kind.
The princess has been the best thing to happen to the monarchy in centuries.
Did you get a chance to see her?
Yes!
They chanted for her?
The Princess is a compulsively watchable documentary which uses the news media's detailed filming of the life and death of Prince Charles's wife Diana. Robin Munro has been off to the Academy cinemas to see this version of events. Robin, what did you think of The Princess, the latest film on this subject?
Well, I found it really drew my attention, and although I knew a lot of the story of her life, and it was a time before now, but she was the centre of media attention, but somehow she managed to be human as well, and we saw a lot of that side of her, and it asked questions about the media and about the public, their appetite for all this information and images about this woman.
Yes, even that goes into that. Yeah, what the people actually think of her, and I think her popularity, there's a little doubt. Yeah, and also how the the media itself handle it. But this is the director, Ed Perkins. It's amazing. He's gone through all this old TV news footage on it and put that together. I mean, a big job to find all this. So much. I don't know why I found this film more interesting than most of these sort of documentaries. I've seen most of it in some way before. But the standard of the film, the standard of the sets, you know, these people meeting at the royal people meeting, these beautiful clothing and everything, just is good to look at. You know, it's an interesting, fascinating film to look at.
Yes, no, absolutely. It's I think also because it doesn't so much judge her as it leaves the audience in many ways to make up their mind. We do hear a few judgments. At one point, Princess Diana said that she wasn't going to communicate with the media anymore, or wasn't going to hold press conferences or something. And someone said, you know, how typical, this woman who's been on the front of every magazine and, you know, has lived from the publicity, uses a press conference to announce that she won't do it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, and the interesting thing is that this documentary is put together without a narrator holding the whole thing together. Any dialogue that you hear, any information, comes from within what was filmed at that time, mm-hmm. in people's conversations, or sometimes a little bit of news media background narration explaining what is going on and this sort of thing. And that sort of gives the whole thing a good more objective sort of feeling, as far as I'm concerned. And, because, I mean, you get to know Prince Charles, you get to know her. I mean, I've never really thought badly of Prince Charles, but in this film you get a chance to sort of compare them.
Yes.
And, well, she wins out as a personality, you know. She comes across as wanting to go out and communicate with people. But with him, in virtually any conversations particularly between the two of them, he is not a very good communicator at all.
He shuts things down a lot.
Yes, he does. He doesn't sort of tell anything. And, I mean, there's an interesting point quite early in the film where somebody in a TV interview asks him, and what things do you two have in common? You see them sort of hesitate. Then they try to answer this together. We're coming up with something. But it's such vague nonsense what they say. It doesn't mean a thing what they said.
Yes, and also in a tragically short life, I guess it covers about 15 or 16 years between the time she became engaged and when she died in a car crash in Paris. But we see the development of a very shy young lady into something who gives a lot of her warmth to other people.
Oh, yes. Some of this was left there. Well, it happened in the later days because she did care for other people. She towards the end of her time, this is actually, I think, more when by the time that she and Charles had actually separated, she spent quite a lot of time in Africa, mm-hmm. caring for the people, finding things for them, doing, you know, things that needed to be done. And so, you know, you see, well, I mean, I was aware of this beforehand, and it didn't come till fairly late in the film, but that's actually quite right, because she didn't do that until fairly late.
Yes. And it did show after her death that really she was mourned all over the world in places like India, but also by Australian Aborigines. And, in some ways she was a big image, but there really was a person behind this too. And she did project herself to the world, and she achieved a lot. It might be anachronism, a royal princess in the modern age, but she did hope to modernise it, and she did try to be very hard to be a princess.
So you could not help you get to see that this whole the relationship between the two was sort of not a particularly good one, because, I mean, they were put together, it was basically an arranged marriage for them. They'd never actually loved each other before and had hardly known each other when they got married.
Mm.
And you see the misery that's built up in the charade afterwards.
Yeah.
And because, I mean, I didn't know that she made several attempts at suicide, slit her wrists a couple of times and sort of thing.
And jumped down the stairs, I think.
Yes,
Really sad. She had eating disorders and other things like this. But, yeah, she was clearly very frustrated and she wasn't being given the freedom to express herself.
Yeah. Oh, no. And yet she can't help sort of your sympathies with her all the way, or mine sympathies with her.
I think most viewers will be,
And Charles somehow seems to lose us. Well, he's lost everything, I think, actually. And he's got this other lady there who he's seeing secretly all this time also, all this sort of thing. Oh, no, I think this, I mean, the whole point is, again, you see this, but you, today, so watching, I mean, we saw most of what's in this film on TV in those days as it evolved.
Those of us who are old enough.
So, you know, but all of this is there. You get to that magnificent wedding of theirs. Well, I remember seeing that as a major event. But now you do see it from a more objective or a different perspective than you saw it in at that time.
Yes,
because now you know how it all ended, mm-hmm. how it ended for her, which you did not know at the time of the wedding. And so, you know, it's still quite fascinating if you keep that in mind. Yeah. Anyway, you reckon it's worth seeing?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, thank you, Robin. That was Robin Munro with his views on The Princess. And I'm Hans Petrovic on Plains FM 96.9. I also thank the show's sponsor, the Harcourt's Grenadier Accommodation Centre, which is now located at 98 Moorhouse Avenue. If you're looking for a place to live, check out the Harcourt's Accommodation Centre website, assetmanagers.co.nz. That address again, assetmanagers.co.nz.
Konnichiwa.
Right on schedule.
Deer Creek International Business Solutions, how can I help you?
I am ready.
Well, that's great, Ladybug.
Ladybug?
Your new operational name.
Oh, I see what you're doing. Ladybug's supposed to be lucky. Ha!
You don't have bad luck.
Really? My bad luck is biblical. I'm not even trying to...
Bullet Train is an extremely violent gangster movie about various assassins travelling on a fast-moving train between Tokyo and Kyoto in Japan. Mary Gibson's been off to the Alice Cinema to see this rather offbeat movie with a high body count. Mary, I understand that this film reminds you of several other films that have come out over the years, but what do you think of Bullet Train?
Bullet Train. Well, I kind of went in with really high expectations. I was hoping it would be fantastic. Let's just say it's fantastical, yes, as opposed to fantastic. And I would view it as a comedic action movie more than anything else, because there are moments of lightness and comedy, even though there is a very high body count. But yeah, I sat through that movie and all the time I was watching it, I kept thinking, oh, this reminds me of Quentin Tarantino's Kill Bill movies, or it reminds me of Guy Ritchie's Layer Cake or Lock, Stock and Smoking Barrels. And it's that same kind of genre, which is almost unbelievable. And then you get these moments of violence and you go, oh, God. But they're not that violent that you're taken aback.
You more think,
oh, this is ridiculous. Yeah. You know, it's ridiculous violence, if you know what I mean, and to the extreme. And so this movie is, it's kind of like, I was laughing. I know you said to me afterwards, oh, you were laughing quite a bit. I was, because there were some real moments of comedy and lightness in it.
Yeah, but then again, I was chuckling throughout the music also, throughout the movie, I should say, also. But I was not laughing because I thought Bullet Train was funny, but because I simply could not believe the scenes of ultra-violence that I was watching. They were so heavy, so hard, some of them.
Yeah,
said,
but
oh,
they
God,
were...
I don't come to the movies to see such heavy-hitting hardness, you know, in violence.
Well, and I think, as I said, for me, they were so ridiculous that to be unbelievable.
That's why
and
I laughed.
That's why you laugh, you know. Or Brad Pitt is the main character, and he's an assassin, and his code name is Ladybug. So that's kind of got to tell you. And I didn't realise that Sandra Bullock was the voice of the woman, Maria, that he kept talking to until the very end, because you don't see her. So it really centres around Brad Pitt's role as Ladybug more than anything. And he's an assassin, but he's having a crisis of his own. You know, he's having a crisis of confidence, a crisis of his personality, and he's just continually talking through his daily crisis. You know, oh God, I'm bad luck, people get killed around me. Well, hello, you're an assassin. You know, so it's not an assassin as in the Kingsman mold. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of the Kingsman, not the first one, but the second one, which I thought was just a bit over the top and ridiculous. That kind of ridiculousness comes through in this movie as well. And the premise of it is that, you know, Brad Pitt's character is an assassin, and he's sent on the bullet train traveling from Tokyo to Kyoto, and his goal is to rescue this briefcase, which has got $1 million of ransom money in it. Mm. And then all these other stories unfold around
it. He finds all these other people. He didn't know that there's going to be half a dozen other assassins on the same place, chasing down, trying to find the same thing.
Money,
He knew none of this beforehand.
And what it does is it does go back to the stories to tell you why they're on the train and how they've got there. And so that's why it reminds me of Guy Ritchie and Tarantino movies, because they do the same thing in their movies. And it's just like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But why is so-and-so connected to such-and-such? And then that comes up, you know, like why they're connected and how they've come to assassinate.
Yeah.
Get your head around it, you know. You have to concentrate and watch it to work out who's connected to who and what their role is in this whole movie.
And this is, I was going to say, you've already said it, but it's not until the end that you find out the reason for why they're on that, or can put it all together, why they're on that train.
Yes, exactly.
And then, of course, it all comes together.
And even that's ridiculous. is ridiculous, you know, and rescuing the son of the gangster, and then you find out that the sister of the son who's being rescued, she's out to get her father. And that's what I mean. It's so complicated. But it does come through, and it is explained. And you do, if you follow it, you know, you'll get it all and you'll get what's going on.
Yeah.
But look, to your point, yes, there is a lot of gratuitous violence. And violence, I don't know, overexposed blood spurting out and necks twisting and things. Do you know, it's not just...
I'm laughing now.
It's not just a shot to the heart or the head. It's like completely over the top, you know. That's what makes it ridiculous, is that over-the-topness of all of that. You know, it's like, can't they just die quietly rather than being shoved off a train? Suddenly they're back on it. They're climbing up the train through the route. You go, it's so ridiculous, it can't possibly be happening.
Yeah. Well, I think you just have to describe this film. It's an extremely farcical action movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess that sort of sums it up.
Yeah.
As such, you can take it as fun, but for me, normally, I would not take that sort of thing.
It is
in a violence.
It is fun. It's not violent in a Godfather way or a way that makes you go, ugh! It's violent in a funny way.
Yeah, and an unbelievable way.
And, you know, like I know I've said this before, you know, don't go to the movies with high expectations and you'll love it. Do you know what I mean?
So, okay. Okay, well, I think that's fair enough. I can sort of see this one doing good, but I think people do have to be forewarned that there is a lot of violence in the film.
Yeah.
But also be forewarned that you find yourself laughing at it.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, well, thank you, Mary. That was Mary Gibson with her views on Bullet Train. And I'm Hans Petrovic, inviting you to listen to Movie Talk again on Plains FM 96.9 at midday next Wednesday. This program will also be repeated at midday on Saturday, and you can listen to podcasts of earlier episodes on the Plains FM website, plainsfm.org.nz.